what you do. Pull up your desk and ensure there's nothing new to you. Kill the process, antivirus systems, I'll be working. Command line's all I need for now, cause I'm protecting. Okay, this is Pure Decking show number 311 for Thursday. What the fuck is today? June something. I'm Morps. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and the fact that I forgot to write a new joke in the notes. Tonight, we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Dos Equis and eating a hot dog. I have not built a wall in my refrigerator yet.
Outstanding. Are you
good to make your gut straight again?
Are you? Say something insightful.
I have nothing.
Fair enough.
That's insightful.
It is insightful. It's honest.
I mean, is it though?
Yeah.
Multiple levels, man. That's deep. Deep.
Like an onion. There's all these layers.
Now you just need to argue to you'll get out of my swamp.
What? I'm lost.
You should
be. GPS is taking me down the wrong street.
You're in the wrong swamp now, motherfucker. Anyways, Syntax, what do you got?
Today I'm drinking Guinness Blonde and eating Cheez-Its directly out of the box.
Well, I was expecting more of a wine pairing, but, you know, hey. What wine would you pair with the Cheez-Its?
So it'd have to be, it'd probably be a Bordeaux, so it'd be French, because Cheez-Its are very sharp. So, yeah, you'd want something aged, a little more mellow, a little deeper on the fruitier and nuttier side.
Okay. And I'm...
So can you do a black and tan with a Guinness Blonde and a Guinness?
I don't see why not. I mean, so it's not a tan, so it's not like an amber or a brown. It's a little too light, so it would be more of a black and blonde.
So, and I'm polishing off my bottle of Elijah Craig. So, anyways, these things evaporate too quickly, man.
Especially when they keep getting poured into glasses.
You know, I mean, you got to keep the glass wet, and then you turn around, and the bourbon's just gone. So, I mean, got to do something about this. I don't know how I'm supposed to maintain my bourbon collection when it all just keeps disappearing like that.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens.
Anyways, let's go ahead and... Psychros eats THC gummies in preparation for detention. I take offense to that. This isn't depressing. We're going to point and laugh at the world on fire. Get out your fiddle. Let's burn. Let's watch Rome burn. Come on.
From what I understand, just eat only one. Don't eat the whole pack.
No, no. The Harbro sugar-free gummies. He'll be fine.
They make THC sugar-free gummies?
What? Yeah. They also make... THC vegan sugar-free gummies.
God damn it.
That's getting too hipster. There's only so much hipster before the world turns sideways.
Like, just admit you want to get fucking high. Stop bullshitting around this stuff.
Well, you know, marijuana is vegan.
I actually saw, like, the stereotypical hipster today when I went to lunch. And went to a burger joint, and it was just you know, you walk in the door, and there's this guy, and it's like I thought that was just a cartoon character, but no, full beard, waxed curled mustache, glasses with no lenses in it, and a man purse, and it's just like, I feel like I should draw my gun. Oh wait, that's in the car. Fuck, I need to run. I was scared.
Don't shoot Reddit.
I was scared. I didn't know what was going to happen. I thought I might be abducted by aliens or something next. So, I mean...
You just need to walk out and say, so how did you get out of the internet? I want to try to climb into it.
Yeah, right?
So,
take me back.
First story, main story, is from Market Watch. A new data breach may have exposed personal information of almost every American adult. A little-known Florida company may...
Again?
Yeah. Yeah. A little-known Florida company may have exposed the personal data of nearly every American adult, according to a new report. Wired reported Wednesday that Exactus, a Palm Coast, Florida-based marketing and data aggregation company, has exposed a database containing almost 2 terabytes of data, containing nearly 340 million individual records, on a public server. So they just threw this data up. It's like, you know, I don't know that it was an S3 bucket, but I mean, just threw it out there, public access.
So wait, does that mean, so it's on a public server?
It was.
Oh. Oh. Yeah, so they just were like, we'll just put it here on the curb. No one will find it.
Some developer going, you know, those passwords and shit are just in the way. We'll just develop without them. And then when we go live, we'll just put it out there. Nobody will find it. It'll be fine. The URL hides it, right?
Yeah. Tell me it's plain text. God, please tell me it's plain text.
That included the records of 320 million consumers and 110 million businesses. It seems like this is a database with pretty much every U.S. citizin in it. Security researcher Vinny Trolia.
Plain text.
What?
If you're going to eat, mute.
Sorry, my bad.
Who discovered the breach earlier this month told Wired. I don't know where the data is coming from, but it's one of the most comprehensive collections I've ever seen, he said. While the database apparently does not include credit card numbers or social security numbers, it does include phone numbers, email, and postal addresses, as well as more than 400 personal characteristics, such as whether a person is a smoker, if they own a dog or a cat, their religion, and a multitude of personal interests. Although no financial information was included, the breadth of personal data could make it possible to profile individuals or help scammers steal identities. Troya told Wired that he was easily able to access the database on the internet, and in theory, plenty of other people could have too. He says he warned Exactus and the FBI about the vulnerability, and the data is no longer publicly accessible. On its website, Exactus said it maintained 3.5 billion consumer, business, and digital records, including demographic, geographic, filmographic, lifestyle interests, CPG, automotive, and behavioral data. The company said it had data on 218 million individuals and 110 million U.S. households. There are about 325 million residents in the U.S., with about 244 million adults and 126 million households, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. So, in other words, it's not everybody, but close enough. Exactus did not respond when asked to confirm the breach. If confirmed, the data leak would be one of the largest in history and far bigger than the Equifax breach last year that exposed the personal information of 148 million consumers. The 2016 breach of Adult Friend Finder exposed the data of more than 412 million accounts, while Yahoo's 2013 hack exposed the personal data of about 3 billion accounts. Change your passwords, people.
Yeah.
Change your passwords.
Again.
While technically not a breach, Facebook said that in March, most of its 2 billion users had their personal data improperly shared without their permission, including about 87 million profiles that were scraped by Cambridge and Analytica. So, yeah, it sounds like they just threw this. I'm willing to bet it was a NoSQL database because a lot of those don't even support security out of the box, right? And, you know, just pick your poison of that one, whether it's like an Elasticsearch or whatever. And, this company was probably just dumping all their shit in it, and they probably had a web app or something where they didn't want to bother to secure it, or worse, their developers didn't know how. So they just threw it out there. Somebody found it.
I want to know what the data they call behavioral is.
Yeah, I kind of want to see if my data is on there and see how much of it they got right and how much of my weird internet antics have fuzzed the data.
With what it sounds like, I think this company aggregates like shopping cart info whenever you use one of those discount cards to see, to, I don't know, like a Kroger card or a Best Buy card.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we've got this company name. Has anybody tried seeing what it is?
No.
No. Let's pull it up and find out what type of data were they storing.
Exactus. Let's see. Exactus.
Meanwhile on Dead Air Island.
Yeah. Listen to us as we pull up the Wikipedia article on Exactus. No entry. Let's see. Exactus. People data for a digital world. About us. Let's just see. Data is the fuel that powers Exactus, warehousing over 3.5 billion consumer business and digital records. The Exactus Data Cloud provides knowledge and insight to hundreds of firms, enabling them to achieve marketing success through the use of high-quality data. The Exactus Data Cloud is one of the largest and most respected in the data marketing industry. The data mining industry? Anyways. It is constructed of households, of compiled and proprietary data sources, has over 400 different... In other words, they've been buying it and compiling it.
No.
Yeah. Oh, we've got the executive team here. Steve Hargridge is their CEO. Greg Williams is their COO. William Pearson is their CTO. And Art Tanner is the CFO. Oh, speaking of people named Art, didn't Art Bell die recently?
No.
I thought I heard he did.
No, I have no idea, man.
Let's see. Art Bell. Date of death, April 13th, 2018. Yeah, he did.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Died at 72. Anyways. He was a trip to listen to, too, because he took those crazies so seriously.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the funner ones, the Coast to Coast AM. It was like, let's find the craziest people and just let them rant at 3 a.m.
He had to have one hell of a discipline when it came to using that mute button.
Mm-hmm.
Just to not be losing his fucking ass on the radio. Just, I'd be rolling to just keep the mute button down. Although it'd be a fun job doing the Coast to Coast AM thing.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Hell, we could do that. Just put out a call on 4chan or something. It's like here's the connection information.
Never doing that again, man. I am never doing that again.
Here's RU46. He's our version of Art Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, never doing that again.
So
I'm scouring Pastebin and Git and
seeing
if I can actually pull the data.
Several terabytes. Good luck.
Well, yeah, but see, most people will have it in a text file and then break it up so that it's easier.
True.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, while you're doing that, let's go ahead and move on to the next story. California. This is from Reuters.com. California lawmakers approved data privacy bill opposed by Silicon Valley. California Governor Jerry Brown on Thursday signed data privacy legislation aimed at giving consumers more control over how companies collect and manage their personal information, a proposal that Google and other big companies had opposed as too burdensome. I'm disappointed Schwarzenegger's not still the governor of California just because listening to him give a speech on this would be hilarious. But anyways... under the proposal, large companies, such as those with data on more than 50,000 people, would be required, starting in 2020, to let consumers view the data they have collected on them, request deletion of data, and opt out of having the data sold to third parties. Companies must provide equal services to consumers who exercise such rights under the law. Each violation would carry a $7,500 fine. The law applies to users in California. This is a huge step forward for California, State Senator Bob Hertzberg, a Democrat, said during the live-streamed press conference Thursday. This is a huge step forward for people across the country. Brown signed the measure hours after it unanimously passed the two houses of the legislature as part of an effort to stop a similar measure from reaching the state's November election ballot. Laws originating in the legislature instead of from ballot initiatives are easier to amend if issues arise, and even opponents in the business community characterize the legislation's version as the lesser of two evils. Alistair McTaggart, a California... That's a name right there. Alistair McTaggart. I mean, that's somebody out of a novel right there, right? A California real estate developer who spent about $1.4 million earlier this year to qualify the measure for the ballot had until Thursday evening to pull his initiative before state officials set the ballot. McTaggart has agreed to do so if Brown signed the bill. He described the compromise on Thursday as a landmark accomplishment, which is the strictest privacy bill ever achieved in the country. This measure would affect nearly every major business, but large technology firms that play an ever-increasing role in online communications and commerce are a big target. Data breaches affecting Facebook, Uber, and other companies have generated increased public pressure for regulators to step in. At Alphabet Inc., Google has warned that the measure could have unintended consequences, but has not said what those might be. Considering you're directly attacking how Google makes its money and Facebook makes its money and about 100 other these companies, I mean, yeah. We think there's a set of ramifications that's really difficult to understand, Google Senior Vice President Sahir Ramsway told reporters on Tuesday. User privacy needs to be thoughtfully balanced against legitimate business needs. The Internet Association, which also represents Facebook and Amazon, had opposed the bill, as had the California Chamber of Commerce, National Retailers Federation, and the Association of National Advertisers. CTIA, the Wireless Industry Trade Group, called on the U.S. Congress to pass legislation instead. State-specific laws will stifle American innovation and confuse consumers, CTIA said. Eric Goldman, a technology law professor at Santa Clara University, said on his blog post that the law will likely affect users outside of California, too, because of the hassle and expense of building state-by-state consumer experiences. Well, I don't know. We were talking about this earlier. It's kind of like GDPR, but for California. Which makes me wonder if you're going to have companies react to it the same way they reacted to GDPR and just start blocking people from California.
How hard would it be to do that?
Actually, not as hard as you might think.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody's using a VPN or something to hide that they're from California, and then, you know, say I live in California and you all have to do this for me. I mean, it could get obnoxious, but
and like so does it only affect them while they're living in California? Like if they move out, then
I don't
is it
think
like
it's
fair
clear.
Game?
I don't think it's clear.
It's a California law. So yeah, it's in California.
What if you like have a PO box in California and you claim residency, but you live outside of California?
I don't know if a PO box is enough to claim residency.
It is in most states.
Well, but if it is, then maybe I ought to claim it as a residency and sign up for it.
I'd say if you have California tax collectors coming after you at any point in time, that you probably are subject to this. So,
yeah. And that's just it. I don't want to pay California taxes. I really like the state I live in because of their taxes.
Yeah, there's always that. So, I mean, it's interesting.
If California keeps going the way it's going, it won't be California for much longer.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, it's an interesting idea to pass a similar law to GDPR, but... And, I mean, California does this shit all the time. This is why you see on almost every label to anything that's, like, made of plastic. You know, this contains chemicals known to the state of California to cause cancer. I mean, it's on every fucking thing made of plastic. So I'm just wondering if you're going to see a disclaimer saying that if you're from California, you have to agree to X, Y, and Z to use our service.
Yeah, and they might just have a clause in their... the toss that
just
says they give up
it.
This right. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And until somebody takes that to court, you don't know if it even holds.
Yeah. And that's several years because it would go all the way through the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it'd have to.
Oh, this has criminal penalties of a fine. It's not going to take a person. California can take you to court. And with $7,500 per violation, and depending on how they measure a violation, that can add up quickly.
Well, I'm just thinking. I mean, Google's got enough money to pay for lawyers, so I mean, Google versus the state of California would be kind of interesting.
Or Amazon, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it just means it's going to go to the Supreme Court. That's all that means.
Yeah.
No one's going to settle.
That or, you know, Google will just buy the state of California, and then we'll, you know, start in the cyberpunk megacorps.
That is a fucking real possibility.
It really is, yeah.
Hey, see your state's in a shit of debt there. Maybe us over at Google can help you out, California.
Make it the United State of Google.
Well, Alphabet, I think, is the company, the name they'd use. But, I mean, fuck, why not? Domino's is trying to claim ownership of roads now, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's story. That's interesting.
They're not suing people over cars as well.
Yeah. Well, okay. So they're not claiming ownership of the roads. But they're fixing potholes as an advertising campaign.
I thought it was a fantastic advertising campaign.
Hey, I'm all for it if they actually fix the fucking potholes correctly so that they don't reform in a day.
Yeah, that would be good.
That's the one that always pisses me off was when they patch a pothole and a week later it's back because when they patched it, they didn't do it right.
Yes.
Problem is that happens usually a lot when they don't here.
Yeah, when they don't do it right, it'll just make the hole bigger and more dangerous, and no one cares.
Yeah, you know, and it never except gets, for the it doesn't get fixed until they re-black it, so do the whole damn thing.
Yeah, or a motorcyclist dies.
You say that. But I live in a state that passed the law saying it's okay to run down protesters, so I don't know that a motorcyclist dying would actually get it fixed.
Well, I guess it depends. If they're on a Japanese pile of junk, then no, it's fine. But if they're on, you know, I bleed red, white, and blue Harley, then they'll probably do something, even though now it looks like a majority of the Harley-Davidsons are not going to be made in the United States.
Who gives a fuck about Harley? All you're doing is pre-purchasing an oil leak.
Well, yeah, yeah. And a bunch of, you know, fetish gear leather.
Yeah, and an overfueled engine to make it sound really shit so it runs terrible.
It's air-cooled, and yeah, just it spits oil out of every orifice.
I don't know how that fucking bike ever stayed. Oh, man.
Oh, so my partner just yelled from the other side of the room, which is also a fetish, you know, spitting oil from every orifice.
Moving on, swiftly. Yeah. Next article is actually from the FileZilla Project forums. So if you've downloaded the FileZilla installer lately, apparently they've gotten, and this is not the first time this happened to FileZilla, apparently somebody's gotten into their repos and malwared up the installer. So they've got a screenshot on here, a virus total of FileZilla version 3.29.0 Win64 Setup Bundle.exe. And they've got, looks like Fusion Core P is detected in it. There's a couple of generic detections, install core. So, yeah.
Wow.
And then immediately other posts from the site admins saying false positive, not real. But I saw reports of this all over the place that lots of other people were saying shit was in FileZilla. So I would be careful about installing FileZilla lately. And, find a couple of anti-malware solutions you trust or, don't get me wrong, FileZilla is a good program, but if you're not certain you can trust the installer, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That always freaks me out on a fresh install. You know, did I get the correct URL? Is there going to be some malware in this?
So someone like halfway down this is like, well, the MD5 hash doesn't show any signs of malicious activity. I'm like, do you know how a fucking hash works?
So.
This reminds me of the McAfee, I think it was McAfee, incident from like, what, 2004? When someone hacked the McAfee antivirus and just put viruses in it.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times.
And, you know, there's several people insulting the people who are even bothering to ask. So I think probably the first thing to do is, if there is a virus in it, they've probably cleaned it up. Although there's posts on here from, you know, earlier this week saying they're finding stuff in the current version of the file still is set up. So you're going to want to check the MD5 or the signatures, because apparently they do sign them.
Yeah. But I mean, if it's something that's happened at the source before they run the MD5,
true,
it's gonna show legit, even if it has malware or not, because MD5 is just going, yep, this is the code that we put out.
I usually use Nite to install it, so I don't know if that's any better or not. So,
actually,
if you go check VirusTotal now, it's got even more things catching, Fusion Core and a few other things, than the original scan did. So somebody's rescanned it and still even finding more shit. So what I'm wondering is it actually malware, or is this like bundled adware? Because like I said, I usually use Nite to install it, and Nite does a good job of stripping all that shit out. So, you know, maybe the FileZilla installer has a toolbar in it or something.
That, or someone has persistence.
Ooh, that could be it. So I would, I'd be careful with FileZilla.
What is persistence?
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, so someone has breached the network and has done it in such a way that they are persistently in the network, like,
okay,
and they're just constantly there.
When I kept breaking into Lee's computer because I had set up a new password on his machine and kept ejecting and had a script to start running a CD drive in and out, you know, at 3 a.m, you don't remember him bitching about that?
I remember us laughing about it.
Yeah, that was persistence, because he kept trying to kick me out and couldn't figure out that I had added a bunch of other accounts. This was over a decade ago, so it's fine.
So, yeah. I mean, statute of limitations should be way gone by now.
And it was a box here. It was a box I helped him build. I mean, come on.
So, and no malicious intent. You're fine.
I was running the CD drive. It was more just to piss him off, because he was being all pissy about stuff. So it's just like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I mean... Now, granted, now to play a little devil's advocate here, if you install Metasploit onto a machine, things lose their fucking mind, because it sees every exploit that Metasploit has, well, as just that, it's an exploit. Like, it's malicious code, and your machine will freak out, and lots of times, like, blue screen and just die.
Well, and you will see some installers trip up your, you know, because they're doing a heuristic and they see, you know, oh, look, it's moving system files around. It must be a virus. Well, no, it's just a file installer. So when you throw it on VirusTotal and several of them are reporting something bad in it, though, that's when you got to stop and think about it.
Yes.
Because usually if it's a false positive, you'll see a handful, 2, 3, say it's something bad. And if it's something known bad, almost all of them will light up. So,
God, I know that I do horrible things on the internet when I click on a search bar and immediately, like, all of the things that are, you know, like, that I've typed into search bars before are all just SQL injections.
So you do all this work on your main rig? You don't fire up virtual machines?
Sometimes.
Huh. He likes to work without a net.
Yeah. Come at me, bro.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll click on malware links on my main rig at work too, just because I don't fucking care and I feel like I know what I'm doing. But I'm just like, whenever I'm doing that kind of work, I usually wrap it up in a virtual machine, just you know, to have less evidence on the drive.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's that too.
So, anyways, next article is from Bleeping Computer, and I think it's hilarious. The OpenBSD project announced today it plans to disable support for Intel CPU hyper-threading due to security concerns regarding the theoretical threat of more Spectre-class bugs. Hyper-threading is Intel's proprietary implementation of simultaneous multi-threading. a technology that enables multiple computing threads to run on each CPU core. So when you buy a four-core, you know, Intel i7 processor, i5 processor, and you bring up Task Manager and you see eight CPU performance graphs, that's because it sees each core twice, and that's hyper-threading. So, and it's fantastic technology because it really, really does speed up what all a machine can do. And like servers really, really need it. So what's, and so OpenBSD is like, just like, you know, you guys can't get it right. We're turning it fucking off. The feature has been added to most Intel CPUs released since 2002 and has come enabled by default, with Intel citing its performance boost as the main reason for its inclusion. But today, Mark Kitness of the OpenBSD project said the OpenBSD team was removing support for Intel hyperthreading, but because by design, this technology just opens the door for more timing attacks. Timing attacks are a class of cryptographic attack through which a third-party observer can deduce the contents of encrypted data by recording and analyzing the time taken to execute cryptographic algorithms. The recently disclosed Meltdown and Spectre CPU vulnerabilities, along with their many variations, are all timing attacks at their core. Intel hyperthreading can make cache timing attacks a lot easier, and we strongly suspect that this will make several Spectre-class bugs exploitable, Kitness wrote. The OpenBSD team is now stepping in to provide a new setting to disable hyperthreading support because many modern machines no longer provide the ability to disable hyperthreading in the BIOS setup. This can now be controlled through a new HW.SMT system control, Kitness said. For now, this only works on Intel CPUs when running OpenBSD AMD 64, but we're planning to extend this feature to CPUs from other vendors and other hardware architectures. Kitness says that SMT doesn't really have any positive effect on performance as Intel and other CPU vendors have advertised, and that the change should not bring a big performance hit. I don't know about that.
So I love this because it's basically OpenBSD going, you know what? Fuck you guys for making bad hardware.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, I just think it's funny because, I mean, a couple of the different SKUs of BSD, OpenBSD, and NetBSD both have always been very security first focused. So, it doesn't surprise me that they're like, oh, it's not secure, fine, we're turning it off. But it is something that's been around for a while. So,
my whole giggle with the whole BSD crowd. Because there is, like, the cult of BSD.
Sure.
And it's bad. Like, those guys will fucking shiv you if you talk bad about BSD. But it, you know, and they're like, oh, we are the most secure, we are the most secure. But, yeah, everything can be the most secure with no functionality.
My internet connection is very secure. It's buried in the backyard.
Yeah. I filled it with concrete. Like, okay.
And then it might be secure.
Yeah.
Yep. So.
So, BSD can do all of their crazy culty things. I mean, it's, you know, Church of Scientology, Cult of BSD. They're right next to each other.
Well, so for what they're saying, and Psychros got it in one in the chat room. He beat me to it, that yes. For desktop use, the performance hit's not going to be that big of a deal. But most people are not running BSD on a desktop. Most people are using Windows or Mac on the desktop. I try to keep that to a minimum because I find Windows machines, when you leave them unattended for any length of time, tend to reset their settings, download Hello Kitty Island Adventure, and light the machine on fire. So any machines that I'm not using every day, I tend to try to keep a Linux install on instead. But that's just me. So
I actually have a really good PowerShell one line that turns off Defender and resets all of the virus definitions. It just erases the virus definitions. So if it is using SCCM or something to report back, it'll never report that there's a virus because there's
nothing to test against.
There's no definitions, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you're on a network using SCCM and you have local admin on that box, that's just, you know. Anyways, poor design. The brain fart. Where was I? What planet is this? Pardon me, do you have the year?
No, we established that at the start of the show.
Right, correct. So, anyways, most people who are running a BSD variant are doing it on a server, or at least on a workstation, and usually those workloads do take advantage of hyperthreading. So, I don't know that you're cutting performance in half, but you are cutting performance down to do that. And, I mean, as much as I would love to see everybody using Linux-based desktops, it's not the case. I mean, or BSD. OpenBSD desktops taking over instead of Windows desktops, I'd be all for it. But I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, and so a lot of guys run BSD for big clusters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because it's really good at that because it has a very efficient kernel. That's why they use it for networking gear and servers and the like. So yeah,
people are going to be real mad if their multi-million-dollar hyper-threaded cluster just stops hyper-threading.
Well, now, to be fair, the way the article wrote it is it sounds like they're giving you the option of disabling it or enabling it. Maybe they'll make it disabled by default, and you can turn it back on if you want, which just means that every guide out there on every WordPress site, you know, for setting up an OpenBSD, whatever, step one, re-enable hyper-threading, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the old Fedora guides used to be step one, install the non-free repos. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and more likely, because it is the cult of BSD, like they'll have it turned on from, you know, by default.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's, of course, you know, depending on the BSD you're using, it is descended from the original OS, you know, the original Unix. So, you know, you got to give them some props for that. But at the same time, it's like, where am I going with this? I don't know where I'm going with this.
I have no clue. I've been lost for the last 20 minutes in this conversation.
Nerd fight! why don't we move on? Speaking of, so, next article is from the Washington Examiner, and I suppose I could throw the links in the chats so that you guys can.
Oh, and speaking of links in the chat, I put up VirusTotal's report on Metasploit, and it's hilarious.
That wasn't no. That's somebody impersonating me, Psychros, or Psychros. Syntax. I was reading Psychros and stuff. He's got some other stuff in there about, you know, setting up servers, but
oh yeah,
I end up.
Oh, drinking. I mean someone.
Yeah, somebody pretending to be me.
Shit.
like I Dang fucking it. Care. Anyway,
I you know what? Next time I should really be the real Psychros.
Well, there's already two of them in there, so.
Oh God, there is.
He's multiplying at an alarming rate of more than one.
Everyone being Psychros. 14 Psychroses. Psychry? I don't even know.
Psychosis. At this point, it's just a psychosis.
Yeah, it really is.
All right. The National Security Agency said Thursday it collected more domestic call records than allowed. And as a result, it has been mass deleting call records across a 3-year period. The NSA said in a statement that on May 23rd, it began deleting all call detail records acquired since 2015 under Title V of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Weeks before the deletions began, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence reported that the NSA acquired more than 534 million domestic calls records in 2017, triple the amount collected in 2016. Wait a minute. That's triple the amount collected in 2016. Hang on a second here.
And they say they don't have quotas.
That's, no. I mean, that's 178 million records in 2016 that they're not supposed to be collecting. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, and see, and I thought the NSA was not allowed to collect domestic calls.
They're not. That's the point. And they collected 178 million in 2016, which is the number the article leaves out, and 534 in 2017. Million.
I would say the it would be a lot higher. There's 320 million people in America.
You're right. You're right.
Is this
the numbers? Day? These are the numbers they're admitting to.
Is it per day?
It just says in 2017.
Yeah, no, I call bullshit. The number is much higher. Gotta be.
I would agree.
The NSA's power to collect these records was curtailed by the 2015 USA Freedom Act, which ended the once-secret dragnet collection of domestic call records and replaced it with a system in which companies supplied records of intelligence targets and their contracts as needed. NSA is deleting the CDRs because several months ago, NSA analysts noted technical irregularities and some data received from telecommunications service providers, the agency said in its statement. It's not our fault. AT&T gave them to us. The irregularities resulted in the production to the NSA of some CDRs that the NSA was not authorized to receive, the statement said. NSA has...
Wait, did they say CDRs? So they're doing this on... So these are physical somewhere.
Call detail records. It's database entry somewhere.
I was like, wait.
CDRs, you're saying, like, they're burning disks.
Yeah, because I was fucking off eating cheese. I'm sorry.
1998 called. They want their data medium back.
Yeah, oh, right? Wow. Like, how big would a stack of 500 million call records on CDR be?
I don't know, but I want to see it done.
I bet you fit all that on one CD. It's just text. Probably compressed the hell out of it. Okay. Domestic call records. Phone number A called phone number B for this duration at this time.
Oh, okay. I guess that's...
Yeah.
And the way they get the domestic records, phone number A is in Kentucky. Phone number B is in Israel. They're listening to phone number B. They catch phone number A.
Yeah, well, and so some of the VoIP stuff I've read about this where, you know, you have phone number A in Florida calling phone number B in New York, but it's being routed through London because it's IP traffic.
Oh, I gotcha.
Or routed through Toronto or whatever. So it leaves the US, so they're allowed to record or do whatever the hell they want because the data has left the United States just because it starts and ends inside the U.S.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that the data didn't leave. Like, that's a way that they've been spying domestically for and getting away with it for quite a while.
Nah, and that's not the official method.
That's part of these 500 million. So not all of it is just them intentionally listening.
Yeah, but you got to remember the official method is the Five Eyes program, where they just have the British intelligence agencies spy on Americans because, you know, it's legal for them to do so. And then we spy on the British citizens and give that to their intelligence agencies because it's legal for us to do so. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, that's just keep that in mind. That's how they're really doing it. So I think RU's right. I think this is PR. This is, see, look, we're trying to do it right. You know, continuing with the article, the NSA said it notified congressional oversight committees and the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. The agency said it also informed the Justice Department, which was notified the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Because it was infeasible to identify and isolate properly produced data, the NSA concluded that it should not use any of the CDRs. Consequently, the NSA, in consultation with the Department of Justice and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, decided the appropriate course of action was to delete all the CDRs, the NSA said. The NSA's privacy practices are subject to several lawsuits, although many cases against the agency's call record dragnet were dismissed as moot after the passage of the Freedom Act. Well, yeah, what? Don't actually look into it. No, we passed a law. It's all good. We said it's good. We see, got Bob over there. Bob's giving the thumbs up. That means it's good, right?
So, it's fine. Ship it. Yeah,
it's fine. Ship it. So I don't see the need to read the rest of the article. But, yeah, the NSA's basically had a bunch of data on people, and now they're like, oh, we weren't supposed to have that. So,
and so I don't know. So this article, I see a couple of typos because – where it says that they're deleting information. I don't see the big quotes because that's definitely how this had to have been said, was they're deleting with really big air quotes.
Deleting. Wink, wink, nod, nod, say no more.
Yeah, yeah, they're deleting information.
Don't worry, it's backed up somewhere else.
Yeah, in Utah. It's the goddamn NSA. They don't delete anything.
In Utah.
Yeah, they have a big data center in Utah.
Do they?
Just, oh, yeah.
I thought it was all in Nevada for some reason.
I thought it was Utah. But it's rack after rack after rack of NAS.
Oh, I don't doubt it. And hell, I'm sure they've probably got it in both. I mean, the only reason I tend to think Nevada is because, like, the federal government owns, like, 80% of that state now.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's in Utah. Oh, okay. The Utah Data Center, also known as the Intelligence Community Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative Data Center.
Is that the shiny black building?
Yeah.
Awesome. I remember seeing pictures of it. It's like, that is straight out of Ghost in the Fucking Shell.
Yeah, it's in Saratoga Springs, Utah.
You know, I bet that's a badass job to have, be a sysadmin at.
Yeah, and I can give you the phone number to it.
Maybe all fair.
Kind of want to call it and just ask, hey guys, if I just drive up and touch the building, will you not shoot me? I just want to touch it.
So this was one of the buildings that got mapped during the whole, what's that stupid, like, walking tracking bracelet thing?
Apple Watch?
Well, yeah, the Fitbit. That whole Fitbit mapping thing. This is one of the facilities that got mapped pretty well during that whole debacle.
Well, if it's a data center that big, I bet their sysadmins are in shape just walking the aisles to get to a server that's fucked up.
Oh, yeah. Well, and their phone number is 1-800-948-8488. Hey. Have fun calling. It's on Google.
Oh,
that's where I found it.
All right.
Like,
all right.
Yeah. It is a pretty black building in the middle of fucking nowhere.
That the map's probably on Google. Because yeah, Fitbit and everyone was reporting.
Well, why not? Area 51 was on Google Map for a long time before they finally got that shit scrubbed. It's probably back on there again, too, because every time they update the satellite.
It's not a black site anymore.
It's not?
Hasn't been for years.
I guess, I guess Area 52 is out there somewhere now.
1996, they were sued by their employees. It seems if it's a black site, it's really, really hard to schedule a hazardous waste removal because you can't have a hazardous waste truck show up to a site that doesn't exist. So the Army was just stockpiling toxic waste in a broom closet, and some people got cancer and died.
That's not the wrong with that, Madman.
We just need the truck to say we don't ask questions on the side.
Yeah, and so I'm actually looking at their site emergency evacuation plan map that tells you how to get out of the building and what's in each room. This is like front page of Google stuff. Like, I don't know if this should be out there.
Think that's a lie, unless it's labeled here's where the flying saucer is.
Well, no, I mean, this is for the Utah data center.
Oh, okay.
Still.
Well, those probably are public record, because most data centers use a Halon fire suppression system, and you don't want to be in there where that thing goes off.
That's for a joke.
No, yeah. No, you don't. It's like, well, hey, you see those guys over there that have their entire data, their entire rack pulled apart? Watch this. Like, where's Bill? He suffocated. He died.
I got $10 saying Ted gets out of there and knocks Bill out in the process.
Oh, my God. So, and also, fun side note on this data center, the NSA has been flying, or I'm sorry, the NSA, Greenpeace has been flying a blimp over it that's big and green, and it says NSA, illegal spying here, with a big arrow pointing down.
You know, somebody in the NSA is going to get drunk and just, you know, take a 50 cal out there and shoot it down.
Yeah. Fucking blimp. That's amazing.
So. Anyways, next story. This is from CNET. Want more privacy? Brave, the ad-blocking browser, has a new way to get it on the web. A new version of the browser released on Thursday adds technology called Onion Routing from the Tor project as an option to keep its private tabs. Tor helps you keep anonymous by shuttling your internet connection through multiple... Okay, you know what? Fuck the article. Brave add the options to open private tabs with Tor. They've basically built the Tor browser into the Brave browser.
Wow.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I'd trust using that because...
that was going to be my next question.
So, okay, if... I've had this conversation with some people lately. If you're using Tor to mask where you're coming to, but hitting sites on the clear net, it's fine. If you're using Tor to fuck around on the hidden onion services, maybe do that in like a Tails instance on a laptop you don't care about.
Yes.
And
is on the exit nodes pwned?
A lot of them are. A lot of them are.
Okay.
And a lot of the Tor onion websites are pwned. Because people will put really horrendous shit on them, thinking, "Oh, it's hidden. It's on the internet. It's on Tor. Nobody can get at it." But it's one of these things where Psychros, you don't use Tails. Use Hunix and set up Hunix correctly. He's in the chat room saying Tails or Hunix. But yeah, if you're just using it to try to mask, an IP that you're coming from, or trying to keep your ISP from seeing it, or maybe you're choosing it to get around, like, web filtering at school or something. It's fine for that. But I would not trust it as far as doing real work and hitting onion browsing websites, especially not on a primary rig. If you're really going to fuck around in Tor, you want to dedicate a machine to that, and it's got to be a machine you do not care to throw out of the window of your car at speed on the freeway on, because you may need that machine to disappear.
You will have a line of police chasing you.
You may need that machine to disappear. I'm just saying, if you need to pop it in the microwave for a minute, it might not be, just be aware.
So the bright blue and bright pink HP Stream laptops do wonderful for that, because they're like $120.
I put a sticker to make it look carbon fiber on to make myself feel better about it, because it's, this baby bright blue. I keep thinking I want to take it apart and try to paint it, but the last time I took a laptop keyboard apart to paint it, it didn't go well.
Yeah. Leave it pink.
Especially
if you're doing something sketchy, you leave it pink, or leave it baby blue. So there was this guy that robbed banks, in a clown outfit, and no one could describe what his face looked like, because they were like, "Well, he's in a clown outfit with big red shoes and shit." Everyone will be like, "He had a bright blue laptop."
Well, it's the magician's trick: hide it in plain sight by painting it red, right?
Exactly.
Plus nobody's going to steal a pink laptop.
Mm-hmm.
True, but if you're really doing it right, leave the default Windows install on the laptop. Maybe bookmark a bunch of Christian websites, Girl Scouts. What else? I don't know. Pick some new. Pick whatever it is you're trying to make sure this machine looks like the user of. It only run Tails from the flash drive. That way, the flash drive can go in the microwave, and then the laptop can be turned in as evidence. And look, all that's on it is all these bookmarks for Christian websites and pictures of flowers, or I don't know,
Christian Mingle.
Yeah, Christian Mingle. There you go.
Yeah.
Just whatever you think you got to do to be above suspicion when they start digging through your drive.
Yeah, and have one, because you have to have something that could make you look a little not suspicious, but be a little sweaty, and a reason why you're a little sweaty at a coffee shop. So I have one Pornhub link in there.
But it's Minecraft porn.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh! All right. Let's do this last story. I do like the Hunix setup, but actually what I really like is not so much Hunix itself, but Hunix inside of the Cubes OS. That is a fantastic way to operate if you really are concerned about, you know, keeping your data protected on that machine. Problem is, cubes is kind of a pain in the ass to use, and you actually end up needing a surprisingly powerful machine to use it well. But it kind of forces you to be careful about what you're doing, so that's a good way to do it. So, anyways, last article we have for tonight is from Business Insider, and I believe Psychro sent me this.
Think I did.
Yeah, and I think RU sent me one of the earlier links, and I forget which one it was. I know Madman wanted me to do the California law. I just realized I've been forgetting to call out who sent me the links. So, anyways, people kicking these food delivery robots is an early insight to how cruel humans can be to robots.
Yeah, this is me.
It's a fucking robot.
All right. If you think this is bad, go work at a For Real Doll repair shop. These aren't people. We can be as fucked up as we want. And humans are psychotic, hairless apes.
Why do we keep coming back to real dolls on every episode?
Well, because you're here, Syntax. We're doing it to make you feel at home.
I guess that's true. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, anyways, the company behind Tiny Food Delivery Robots has admitted that people are kicking its machines. And it's an early insight to how cruel humans can be to robots. I don't have an appropriate sound effect.
Or how annoying a robot is cutting in fucking line trying to get you your Mugu Guy pan. Oops, I didn't see it. I was walking and it cut me off. It's like a fucking cat. Yes, I'm talking about you.
Starship Technologies was launched in 2014 by Skype co-founders Ati Inali and Jonas Furlis. It makes 22-inch tall robots that roll along the pavement at 4 miles per hour delivering food to people. Starship is just getting started and this week raised $25 million and appointed Airbnb veteran Lex Baer to be its new CEO. The ambition... Lex Baer. Okay. The ambition is to scale up and bring the robots to millions of people around the world. Hintala told... there's no T in that. Hainala. All right, I'll get it right eventually. Hainala told Business Insider that while most people like the robots, there are a few who take exception. Some people pass our robot and kick the robot a little bit, Hainala said. But that's not really a problem, I think. If people have such anger management techniques, that's fine by us. Our robot just drives on. But it's not the first time Starship robots have encountered antipathy. The source told Business Insider in 2016 that a member of the public once attempted to rip the flag from one of the robots that was out on delivery. Oh, no! But Hinala is relaxed about the idea that people might seriously damage the machines. If anyone were to try to give one a real kicking, they are equipped with 9 cameras, sirens, and tracking to within an inch. The good news is that the vast majority of people respond positively to the machines. A spokesperson for the Starship Technologies told Business Insider that one out of the 15 million people the robots have encountered so far, or 80% just ignored it. And the majority of interactions were extremely positive. People abusing robots is not new. In a 2015... So I love this. The entire article is structured around people abusing robots, right? And yet the people who make the robots are like, yeah, occasionally somebody kicks one. Or tries to take the flag off of it. You know, it's not a big deal. But now we go back into the social justice. People abusing robots is not new. In a 2015 study, which placed a robot in a Japanese shopping mall, found that when few people are around, children displayed antisocial behavior towards the robot by blocking its way, calling it names, or even acting violently toward it. It's a robot. It can take it.
They do that to other children.
Yeah.
Have you seen what children do to each other?
Yeah, I know. There's nothing.
Yeah.
This is child
behavior. I once lived in a neighborhood where I was concerned about leaving grilling implements out because I was afraid I was going to find a dead child in the yard with the grilling implements sticking out of his chest.
Yeah, I have some voice commands set up for my home media system, and I'm fairly mean to it. Like you can tell it to shut the fuck up,
and it probably thanks you for it.
It does.
I mean, it doesn't give a shit.
I'm going to give everybody a little hint. If then statements don't have feelings.
Yeah.
But Morbs, you know why people are kicking these robots?
Yeah, that's in their way.
Take the good jibs.
Nice.
They're hoping for free lunch is what they're hoping for.
They're, you know, steal one of the fucking cameras out of the thing. They just said there's nine of them in it. Tackle the robot and start stealing the parts.
Yeah, but before we did this show, I'd be black bagging them, dude.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know what?
There's a lot of cool sensors in it.
I wouldn't just black bag them. I'd reprogram them. You know, duct tape a high point firearm on the side of the thing and let it go. I wouldn't even bother hooking anything up to the trigger. I just want to see people panic because I see a cheap ass gun duct taped to the side of the robot.
Dude, fucking, or Cammy Weld
followed around with a boombox playing the Terminator theme. I mean, you know.
I do like the big dildo idea.
Yes, or sticker bomb it, you know, something like that. Spray stencil it.
Or you know, inject malware into it, and you just have a roving botnet.
Dude, spray glue and throw cat hair on it.
God.
It looks like it's got hair.
It's a miniature Sasquatch, run!
It's a fucking nine-eyed Muppet. And
googly
honestly,
eyes.
Yeah, like I said, if they want to get people to stop being mean to their robots, make them fucking cute. Put googly eyes on it and a stupid fucking grin, and people will be happy. But this thing looks like a weird wheeled spider.
Yeah, the taxidermist is going to be very confused with what you ask it to do to the dead dog, but once you've draped the dead dog in front of it, like the robot has just ran it over and sucked it up into the gears.
Or just start attaching animal carcasses to it so it just drags them along the street?
Make it like one of the robots in Borderlands that asks for human clothing and the body parts to adorn itself.
Oh.
I'm looking at this camera array. It looks like it'd be worth quite a bit. And I'm betting the GPS program in there is pretty good as well, like running it.
Is the roof of that thing solar? Is that a solar panel?
That's what it looks like. Looks like. So, you know, a couple of those and you're charging batteries at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I need to start ordering some of these to my neighbor's house.
They would make some pretty good go-kart wheels by the look of it, and it's got some pretty smart little LED lights on the front.
You're going to start seeing... This thing would... You're going to start seeing street people who have made new inventions by repurposing the stolen delivery robots.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be underground robot fighting.
Hey, you know what I'm doing, man? I'm jacking one of these, reprogramming it for myself, and then using it as a drug delivery mule.
That's not what I envisioned.
4 miles per hour. There could be some fat people getting in shape, stealing other people's lunches.
I was actually envisioning, are you stealing it, reprogramming it, and just riding it around, you know, Napoleon style.
That'd be great.
You know, if you got 5 or 6 of them, you could probably make them pull a chariot.
Dude, yes. Or you could put a fucking huge chair on top of them and ride them around.
Well, then you would get in the way of the solar panel, and we don't want the batteries to die.
Good point. And yeah, the chariot thing's pretty good.
What if you strung a hammock between them? It's 22 inches high. You might be able to make it work. Might be dragging on the ground. I don't know.
Four of them, and you would have to make them keep their separation. But yeah, I think
that's
just
swarm programming. Surely that's in there. I mean, it's got 9 fucking cameras and GPS positioning.
Yeah. You should know. Fine.
Depends on how much they weigh. We may have to fill the lunch compartment with concrete.
Or
take out the plastic gearing and put some metal gearing in there so it doesn't strip going up hills.
Ammunition.
Yeah.
Could put beer in there.
Oh.
So you have most of them pulling the chariot, and you have the one that occasionally runs off to get more alcohol.
Yes. I want this thing to say, eat recycled food. Can we teach it to say, eat recycled food?
I don't know. I noticed the most dystopian fucking thing at the office this morning coming in. You know, I work in an office park, and one of the buildings, they have a coffee bar in the mornings. So they've put up a banner everywhere that says start your day with coffee. It's like, you don't have to tell office people that. But no, it's like, that's all that, it says. And it's just like, what the fuck is this?
That's creepy, man.
It is. No, wait.
Hey, I don't know what beverage. Should I drink a Monster? Oh, no, I'll have coffee.
So, I mean, it's right up there with riding the Daleks. I mean.
Yeah.
That's fucking nuts, man.
It's like office drone much?
Like,
fuck.
Start, middle, and end our day with coffee.
Well, true. Well, but.
I mean, just with higher and higher levels of alcohol in it.
Well, so, speaking of unhealthy levels of caffeine consumption. All right, I got three different links for us tonight in Digital Dojo. The first one is a CrowdStrike blog post and is actually kind of awesome. Let me get this posted. I suppose I could have posted this when I was playing the jingle, but whatever.
So CrowdStrike does a lot of really neat things.
They do.
If you like, if they're your host, they mitigate a ton of attacks. It's really kind of fun. I've been playing with that lately.
So I'm not going to read the whole blog post here because there's a lot of detail in it and a lot of information. But there has been an API to Office 365 that Microsoft has not advertised. It's part of the Activities API. And you can use it to actually do proper forensics on an Office 365 installation. I.e., like, if somebody gets into an email account, you can tell what emails they've opened rather than just having to report every email in the account breached.
That's cool.
And whereas you can turn a lot of this logging on in 365 and get it through the regular menus, this is through an API. It's not documented, or at least it hasn't been documented. And it looks like it exposes a lot of interesting data. So if you're dealing with an Office 365 installation and you need a way to deal with some of this stuff, it's all here. And they've got example curl commands to get a lot of this data. So,
okay, this is really neat.
Isn't it? Yeah, I know you've done some work with 365 syntax. So, I mean,
yeah.
You know, if you've had to deal with a breach in 365, which I'm not saying that I have, but I might know something about it. I believe I am legally required to not say that I know anything about 365 breaches. They're currently working on a Python module for this thing.
Yes, I see that.
Oh, have they released it? Earlier when I looked at this, a day or so ago and the module wasn't out. Yeah, it's up. They've put out the Python module on GitHub. Sweet.
So the question is, how quickly is this going to get turned into a Metasploit module?
Five, four, three. Pretty quick. But, I mean, you know, you're still authenticating to the API to get your data, right? But, I mean,
yeah.
Still, you can actually get appropriate message. You know, you can actually get in and see what the fuck's been going on. That's one of the big gripes about going to 365 is you lose a lot of the visibility you got running your own damned email servers, right? So, sweet, they got the Python module released. I am going to be playing with this. So, anyways, I thought this was really cool. And if you are admitting a 365 instance, this is definitely worth your time to dig into.
Yeah, so if anyone wants to give me a 365 instance that I can play with, I would be
go buy one of those HP laptops. It's like $120. They come with a year of free 365.
Oh yeah,
I've got a card that I haven't activated that I've been waiting around for an excuse. So,
yeah,
for the 3 year.
Because I need another throwaway because my old throwaway died after DEF CON last year.
Whoops.
Yeah.
So
it's DEF CON. DEF CON's hard on hardware.
Yes. This is why you have throwaway machines, preferably Chromebooks, because mm-hmm. you can usually get those really damned cheap, and they don't have enough space to actually hold anything important.
Yeah. So. Well, those HP streams, same way.
Yeah. I've got one of those floating around, too. Like I said, I put a big sticker on it trying to make myself feel better about it. But
So it's almost Nyan Cat blue. So
it really is.
You just need to put stars on it and... Yeah, just go that way with it.
You know, there's a guy at work who has an amazing amount of My Little Pony shit all over his desk. And I'm thinking it would fit perfectly on his desk.
It would.
And it's just like, you know, at first you start giving him shit for it, and he thinks you're giving him kudos, and it's like, oh, God, he's proud of it. How the fuck?
When you walk past and go, nice ponies, bro, he goes, cool, thanks.
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
So at that point, you stop making fun of him, because it's like, oh, God, he likes it, and he's going to think I'm into it.
There's someone who didn't has never been punched in the face.
So... oh, I should talk to you about that later. Are you? I bet you could figure out. Anyways, anyways, I'm going to stop talking now before I get myself in trouble. Talos, from Talos Intelligence, the Cisco development thing. There's a new version of some ransomware floating around called Thanatos, which I think was the bad guy in the Secret of Mana games. Anyways, the ransomware has been anthropomorphized because I assumed it was, you know, a video game character. Oh, we lost Mad Ben. He might come back. Anyways,
bye, Mad Ben. We love you.
So, anyways, this ransomware has been floating around. It's pretty popular at the moment, and so Talos put out a decryptor tool for it. Pretty much, if you get infected with Thanatos, you can pull down this decryptor and probably get your data back.
So there's, I don't remember if it's Talos or, but someone has a database of ransomware decryptors.
There's a couple of them floating around now. I know Talos has put out several decryptors. I think Sophos has put out a few as well.
He uses Notepad. Mm-hmm. They didn't even go through the trouble of.
Well, that's just the text file that gets dropped everywhere to say, hey, your files are encrypted.
Oh, yeah, at least with WannaCry, it was like an image that like someone took some time to make. This is.
I imagine it's probably a variant on Locky, because Locky was a PowerShell-based encryptor, and it would just leave that a text file in every fucking folder encrypted.
Yeah.
And I'm betting this is the same thing, where it just leaves this text file everywhere. So it's probably a variant on Locky. But, you know,
it says it's on the victim's desktop.
Yep. Oh, okay. So, yeah, anyways, they've put out a decryptor for it so you can, you know, possibly save your files, which is kind of nice. Still, backups people. But anyways, I always like it when these decryptors come out, just because it's kind of a good fuck you to the people doing ransomware.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, these are good, and it's been just over a year since they arrested, or almost a year since they arrested dude, the Malwarebytes guy for not WannaCry, but a different one
that
he totally didn't write.
Yeah, that happens. And the last thing I have for us tonight in Digital Dojo. Is the articles on HelpNet Security describing what it is, but there's some researchers that... okay, so everyone knows the yellow dots thing with color laser printers, right? Do I need to explain what that is?
Wait, what?
Yeah, I'm not following you.
Okay, so there's been a long-time tinfoil hat theory that color laser printers put a pattern of yellow dots on every page you print, with like the printer serial number and the timestamp and some other shit like that.
Oh, yeah. I know that. Yeah.
That. So some researchers wrote an app for your phone that can decode the yellow dots. And then another app that helps you print random yellow on the page to fuck up the dots.
No, that's cool.
So... if you want to check and see if your printer has the yellow dots, there's an app. They've got it posted on GitHub, so you can build it yourself. And it's got a function in there for fucking up the pattern of the yellow dots that you can take an input file and, you know, clean it up. I haven't dug too far into it. I just love the concept that it's fucking around with the PDF to add extra data so the yellow dots are useless. But... they analyzed a whole bunch of different printers, and like so like just reading through here, manufacturer Brother, Dots found no, Canon yes, Dell yes, Epson some models, Hewlett Packard some models. Damn, they did. They examined 43 different Hewlett Packard printers. One IBM printer, yes. Conical Minolta.
HP puts
some models.
Out like I know like 400 printers a day.
I'm more just amazed that they did that many.
Yeah. Well, and HP printers are junk. Don't buy HP printers.
Oh, yeah. Kyocera, through 4, that. Yes. Lanier, yes. Lexmark, some models. NRG, yes. Okidata, some models. Ricoh, yes. Samsung, no. Savin, yes. Tektronix, no. Unknown, yes. Wait, what? It's actually called unknown. Xerox, some models. Anyways, it's interesting research. I'm not certain who's doing a lot of printing for, like, stealing documents in this day and age. Flash drives are a hell of a lot easier. But, well, whatever. Anyways, so...
Well, so
it's more like if, say, you commit a crime and you're holding a child for ransom and you send the note that you've printed out from your printer.
Yeah, but what happened to the old days of, you know, getting the contact cement so you at least got a good high while you're doing it and, you know, cutting up magazines?
There you go.
And it's also craft time with whoever you've kidnapped.
It's time for shitty arts and crafts, kids, as we do your ransom letters to your parents.
Exactly.
That's actually kind of creepy because now I'm envisioning kidnappers having a class of, you know, like, toddlers and making them write in crayon to their own parents.
It's humanizing a fucking kidnapper, isn't it?
A little bit.
Oh, look, they're in playtime with the kid. That's great. You just put more attention than they're getting. Oh, Jesus.
Well, I mean, if you're going to kidnap a small child, like, you have to keep them entertained or else they're just going to whine and cry and be little assholes because most children, I know because I have a couple, are little assholes. That's
why I'm not a kidnapper.
Yeah. They're small, belligerent, drunk people. Like, yeah, you have to keep them fucking occupied.
So, anyways, that's all I've got. We lost Madman, so we're going to assume Madman's closing thoughts were him declaring his never-ending love for My Little Pony and manga and
pillow.
Yeah, there you go. So, are you closing thoughts?
Oh, just a little interesting dystopian news front here in Australia. We're going to be every service station in Australia will be teaming up with local law enforcement to put in number plate readers. So as you fill up, the cops will be notified if you're wanted or you've committed a crime in a vehicle.
So what I'm hearing is those license plate flippers are going to get a little bit more expensive in Australia.
Big brother surveillance, man. That's what it is. Yeah, it's fucking nuts.
All right, Syntax.
Anyway.
Closing thoughts, views on views, whatever you want to call it.
So in future news, we're asked, you know, someone asked the president why we need a space force. And his reply was Space ISIS.
Winning.
Nice. It's just so much winning, you can't take it anymore, man. I'll tell you what. that said, why did he have to call it Space Force? If he had called it Starfleet, everyone would have been on board.
Dude, he would have gone up 10% popularity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. That was definitely a missed opportunity.
Oh, man, if he'd come out in a skin-tight fucking uniform, too.
User entered your channel.
You know what I mean?
Oh, we got Madman back.
Skin-tight. Yay, Madman. Yeah, in a skin-tight Starfleet uniform.
No. I want him to come out in, what's the Galaxy one with Tim
Galaxy
Allen?
Quest.
Yes, I want him to come out in that, but make Star Trek references. Right?
Oh,
just
God,
totally,
yeah.
So he's fucked up three genres. Just totally balls it up. And as he walks off the stage, you say, may the force be with you, USA. Just totally get nerds fucking raging out, man.
And what was it? Service?
Service guarantees citizenship or whatever.
Service guarantees citizenship.
I just want to see him whip a cape around as he walks off fucking stage, man.
Yeah, peace signs in the air, a la Nixon, and just drop the mic, walk off stage.
Yeah, I mean, man. If you've never seen him give a stump speech,
yeah,
fucking go watch one. It is great. It's like comedy. It is fantastic.
Madman, closing thoughts, future news, whatever.
I would steal a pink laptop if it had Mr. stenciled on it.
Yes. Okay. So would I, actually, I think.
Say that again. I just want to make sure I heard it right.
I would steal a pink laptop if it had Mr. stenciled on it.
Mr.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
yeah, absolutely.
That's it. I'm playing the thing. The end.